April 5th, 2023 at 8:45 on the clock. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's okay, I'm stuffed up anyway. The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to my left. Attendance by observation, Juergens, Haxby, Schuler, Thiemann, Dorn, Waverly, and Lytle. Up first is the consent agenda. Approve the general agenda. Approve minutes of the meeting held March 22nd, 2023. Approve all claims through April 5th, 2023 in the amount of $409,335.02. Accept claim number 2304092 to Hard Rock Quarries, LLC, in the amount of $2,583.09, and claim number 2304098 to RL Thiemann Construction, Inc., in the amount of $53,113.44, to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve receiving and place on file the 2022 annual report for Odell Volunteer Fire and Rescue. Approve reappointment of Daniel Paul, 8383 East Cherry Road, Adams, Nebraska, 68301, for another term on the Gage County Veterans Service Committee, expiring July 2028. Approve District Court Summary Fee Report and Register of Deeds Fee Report for the month of March 2023. I'd ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented. Unless there's an item to pull off.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, second by Swavely. Any discussion on these items? If not, please vote. Ms. Haxby, are you voting nay? 7 in favor. Motion carries. Regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 2304092 to Hard Rock Quarries, LLC, in the amount of $2,583.09, and claim number 2304098 to RL Thiemann Construction, Inc., in the amount of $53,113.44. This would bring the total amount of claims approved through April 5th, 2023, to $465,031.55. These are both companies I'm involved with.
RL Thiemann, is that for gravel and hauling?
That is for gravel and hauling, primarily from the Belvedere pit.
Motion approved.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, second by Dorn. Any discussion on these two items? If not, please vote. 6 in favor with Thiemann abstaining. Motion carries. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items for the Board of Supervisors. There is a sign-up sheet to my right for the public hearing that we're going to have at 9:30 for solar conversion systems. If anyone would like to speak or sign up for that public hearing. Nothing from the public. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming. We'll move on to committee reports. Building and grounds, winter lights, Mr. Swavely.
Nothing major going on. You know, we haven't had any major events to worry about. Normal activities. David's recuperating. Okay. The three architects that we asked to give us some conceptual drawings of the maybe, you know, just in case from the east entrance. Okay. One of them has been in contact with me for two or three different occasions asking questions. The other two haven't done too much yet, and I figured maybe I better give them a call and see what's going on. It's not a hurry, but we still, you know, rather than one of them is pretty active and the other two are just, so we're going to see what we can do and see what they have to offer us. Okay, so that's about it.
Thank you, Mr. Swavely. Equalization valuations are at the state for approval. We'll be waiting to see if we pass on the valuations, and then everything will be mailed out the first week of June. Finance and insurance, Mr. Juergens.
Large ticket items. Lamo Plumbing Incorporated Extension Office Remodel, $22,214. Beatrice Concrete Sand and Gravel. Rock and Gravel, $16,282.87. Contact Engineer Solutions for culverts, $28,732. R.L. Teeman Construction, Township Gravel and Hauling, $53,113.44.
Veteran Service, Mr. Lytle.
Yeah, we got Scott here today.
Morning.
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 We had our County Veteran Board committee meeting on April 5th. We reported Nebraska Veteran Aid. We had five claims. One was denied. One is still was pending, but it was the one that was denied was for maintenance. And the four other ones were for funerals. It come to a total of $8,642.21. We had one county veteran aid claim for dental work, and that was $217. We had 22 deceased veterans from December 15, 2022 to March 27, 2023 within the county here. Of course, you guys voted on Dan Paul. We voted on that also to stay on the board. We're still working on the Memorial Day program for May 29th at Evergreen Cemetery. I attended the VFW County Veterans Training on February 2nd. And then I went to the NACO County Veteran Service Office meeting, and we talked about the new VetraSpec system that's coming in. And that was on 16 March. And then I'll do my certification training on April 19th through the 21st, and that's going to be in Broken Bow. I keep putting the word out for veterans to be recognized by the board, and that we're always in need of volunteer van drivers. And pending any questions, that's all I have.
Betsy, some of the conversation, I'm going to leave it up to you whether it's worth your time or whatever to make comment here, especially since you've got a couple of journalists over here that might spread the word. But I guess to me it was concerning as I listened to you guys discuss the medallions that you put out for grave sites, for veterans' grave sites, and how them get stolen or whatever. I don't know if you see any value in maybe an article can be done about whooping those people and catching them and whooping them.
We had an incident at the Scott Street Cemetery. They had stole all the metal medallions out there that they put the flags in. They were all – this has been a few years back, probably 4 years back, but it they were all bronze ones back then, so they stole them for the metal. We don't replace them with them. We replace them with aluminum ones. They're not worth near the value as the other ones. So,
whether it's bronze or it's pewter or it's just pot metal, doesn't matter. It's a veteran's it's a veteran's site, and
absolutely,
people should have enough respect not to do something like that. I guess is my thing.
It was about 60 of them that were stolen. And they haven't asked to replace them yet. I offered it to them, so they haven't asked to. But otherwise, that's all I got, unless you got anything else.
I guess just we're approaching budget time. Your veteran aid fund, I mean, is that been a dollar amount that works for you? Is that something
right now it has. I actually wrote it down. We have $6,528 in it right now in the county veterans fund. So,
And like I told your predecessor, too, I mean, if we get into a pickle or something happens, we can work with you, too. But just as budgeting comes along, just since you happen to be here and we appreciate you giving us an update, just let us know if we ever need to work on that.
All right. Yep, sounds good.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thank you.
Scott?
Do you want to put that on file?
I have a copy.
that place on file?
Every time I don't, then someone does, so. Human Resource Employee Relations, nothing really to bring up there, I don't believe. Law Enforcement Emergency Management, Mr. Lytle.
Lisa, you got anything, or are we going to save all the ammo for later?
I can wait. How's that sound?
Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Gus, you got anything you want to? Do you want to just? Do you have anything you want to say about this? The deal down in Odell. Yeah.
I didn't know how much you want to talk about that. It's important. Yeah. I think you all got a copy. It's important to you that when you bring those things up to my attention, we look into it. You can tell the email. We try to do what we can to be fair to people about it and take care of things there. I think everything, the videos, the conversations people had on the public were not obviously true. And that's just like it's true for the media nowadays. It's always negative. Terry mentioned that nothing was found, and that's because they were tipped off. And that's why she offered to fix coffee and breakfast for my guys. She knew. But just understand that if you hear something, let me know, and I'll certainly check into it for you. Just like here, it turned out to be really more than it really, really was. So.
Always two sides.
There's always two sides. Exactly right. So. Okay.
Vehicle's good.
We're still waiting in line for our other ones getting in. I mean, everybody else is ahead of us, obviously. They bring them from all over the state of Nebraska over there. So, but they're waiting, and hopefully any day we'll get a call, and we'll start moving them through. So.
Equipment's on hand and ready
up there, it's ready to go. Yep, it's all there.
Just throwing it out there again, is it worth trying to get someone here in town trained or maybe contacting someone here in town? Because if there's that amount of business going to that one joint in Omaha, maybe we could start pulling that business into Beatrice or one of our surrounding communities.
Well, it's in the day we used to have somebody in town did it. Arlen Hawley, actually, who did it for years. But going from when he had one radio on a red light, and that's all we really had, now to all the stuff we have now. We have somebody. There's somebody in Lincoln. I don't know if they say they do good work. I don't know. There was somebody down in Seneca, Kansas that does it. It's pretty specialized, so I don't know just every Tom, Dick, and Harry can do that.
Well, I didn't know if we could get someone that would spend the time to train to do it, and maybe they would take some of that load from Omaha. It could be a good additional business for a local shop here. Just wondering, maybe a yes-no question. Were we safer and in better shape when we only had a radio and a red light in the area?
And one bullet,
yeah. Or safer now?
Well, it's like I told you before, Eric, the technology has dropped my budget. It's just crazy what the stuff is. I held off longer. I couldn't tell Roger, so we got to get the computer systems for the citations, e-citation equipment. That was a few $1,000. For all the cars.
I was just looking for a yes or no, safer then or now?
Well, they have more equipment. I got by fine for years, all that stuff, but times change. I'm old school, so.
Well, if there is anyone, I mean, that you guys know of, a good shop or something, maybe have them look into this, Mr. Lytle.
I have had some conversation around the community and with some of the Jefferson County people and some of our IT people at Farmers Co-op, and I've discussed it with several different people, and the problem, Eric, is there's just not enough volume of work, and the liability that you're taking on because you're dealing with a law enforcement vehicle, and the low volume, it's hard to get somebody talked into even giving it a try.
It might surprise them though. I mean, if they would pull some of the business from, I mean, Jones has to have quite a few going through there.
He's got several going through there. He probably got eight technicians full-time all the time. Yeah. And I didn't realize he had people coming from clear out west, and they'll come out here even. They'll just spend 2-3 days here doing whatever they're going to do in town until he gets a card done. I mean, and he does exceptional work. There's no doubt about it. He does. But like he says, it's having that volume all the time. They have it there, obviously, because they pull in everybody. But
Counselor?
Talk to the college and see if they would consider. I mean, it's got computers and automotive hooked into one, and he said statewide has this shortage. Milford might be in a situation where
it's not a bad idea.
Part of class.
It's worth a thought. Worth a discussion.
Worth a call anyway. Yeah.
Milford does a lot of good stuff over there.
Yeah.
Well, that's about it otherwise.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Can't get situated.
Mm-mm. Road and Bridge, Mr. Juergens. Road and Bridge, Ms. Haxby.
Well, I don't have my cheat sheet for what we talked about.
Gosh. Wing it. really slacked yesterday. We just had a bad day in our office.
The bus bridge is about a month from completion, so that's good news. And then we got a new Mack truck, and we were driving it home, and the engine light came on, so we drove it back.
Was it the new one? It was the 17.
Okay. So they're still fixing that. Well, I think that's it.
Those fixed things, repaired things. And
sealed things.
We fixed things, we repaired things, we sealed things. They worked everywhere.
did we cut trees?
I don't think trees was in this one.
I think there was. I think there was.
No, but that's
very minimal if there was.
Yeah, it was. I think it was one day of, really of maybe trimming.
Blew up yesterday.
You're supposed to have a spoon and some feed for us.
I know. I'll tell you, it just... I had it on my desk to do, but not very.
I think that was a close enough, right?
Yeah, it was. there wasn't a whole lot on your sheet, but.
Oh, they jackhammered, too.
Oh, crap.
Some wing walls, Island Grove. A lot of sealing. A lot of seal stuff.
Good time to do it.
How many counties are done with gravel? Townships?
18, townships.
18 out of 24. Spring of 22.
So almost done with spring of 22 then. There should be another two to do. Probably done. What was I going to ask you, Mark? You lucked out. I'll call you later.
No take backs.
Anything else for Odin Bridge?
Had his chance, right?
If not, we'll move on to Angie Bruna for the Gage County Tourism Report. You keep bringing us new folks.
I do. Always good ones.
She's into bringing new people into the county.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, there we go.
Population's going up.
Yep. We have tourism just from new hires.
Thanks, Angie.
Educational opportunities. Good morning, everybody. I'm Angie with the Beatrice Area Chamber and Gage County Tourism, and I have our new tourism coordinator with me this morning, Dakota Hurley. She started back in January and has really hit the ground running and is doing some wonderful things. So we're going to tag team our report this morning. I'll go over some of the numbers that I just passed around, and then she'll talk about the activities that we've been working on since she started. If you'll take a look at the colored sheet that's on the top, it talks about the lodging tax dollars that have been collected for this fiscal year. So we're on the July through June. Most of the months have been having good months, and we hope that trend continues. If you look at the most recent one, that would have been December of 2022, it was up 164%. We do know that that's the rooms are being filled currently. There's a lot of workers who are staying in town, so we appreciate all those. It does present some challenges coming up this summer if they stay that full. How do our tourists have opportunity to find rooms? So things we have to be working on and working together with. Visitor Improvement Fund grant-wise, we have had several intents that we've reviewed, and those folks have been recommended to go back and finish their application process. So hopefully in the next month or two, we'll be able to bring some projects to you to review and get some funding going for these cool things that are happening. I don't want to spoil their projects just yet, so we'll wait till the applications come in. But and then in addition to the intents, I think we've looked at three or four over the last month and a half as the Tourism Advisory Committee. And then I know I've talked to two or three other groups who are interested in applying too. We have quite a few dollars to distribute, so that's a good thing that people are interested in looking at those. I'm going to turn it over to Dakota if she wants to tell a little bit about herself and then what we're
going
on.
Okay, so unfortunately for you, I'm not new to Gage County. I've lived here basically all my life. But my husband and I live down in Wymore and have five kiddos. So Kind of what I've been working on since I started was the visitor's guide for Gage County, and that was kind of a joint effort. There was a raw design when I came, and we just kind of edited that as a whole team, and that is finally sent to the print. So soon we'll be getting those back. And then there's also a brochure swap that I'll be attending in Kearney. So basically I can go, I can drop them a whole bunch off in Kearney, and then they get distributed along I-80. So all the visitor stops along I-80 will have those. It's a 32-page guide, and it basically tells about almost everything that we have to offer in Gage County, not just our typical tourism sites, but our fun little bakeries and nice restaurants and stuff like that. In, I think it was February, I attended the agritourism conference in Kearney, and there's a whole, there's a fun take on that. Kearney has, like, whitewater rafting, so that was kind of fun to see. Obviously, I'm not a whitewater rafter, but it was kind of fun how you have this town in the middle of the Midwest that has whitewater rafting, and all the other fun ideas that there is for agritourism. I've attended some Centec meetings and got some information from them. Centec is the Southeast Nebraska Tourism Council, something like that. So basically, all of our area, how can we work together to send folks to our neighbors and kind of work off of each other. I also joined with the Byway 136 committee. Their biggest thing that they're doing is the Trail of Treasures. That's the first full weekend of October. So I kind of jumped full force into that, and they're wanting me to redesign the website and kind of bring that up to date, help them figure out a better way to collect funds from their, what would you call them? Vendors, yes. So that's what I'm working on there. The gal that currently runs that is, she's getting older. She's looking to get out of it. So I'm hoping to jump in as much as I can, and hopefully we can kind of get that going and make it as big as it can be. Just last week, I submitted content for a website ad on Visit Nebraska. So we'll have a Gage County ad on the Visit Nebraska website. We're working on content for a social media blitz, and that has to be submitted, I think, next week. So that'll be going out soon. And then there's also a half-page ad content that we're working on getting together that will go in the actual Visit Nebraska guide, and we'll have a whole half-page ad in there. And I think that's about it. Oh, also, one thing that I wanted to note, just because I think it's really fun, is one of our top pages visited on our website is the roller skating page, because we have, like, a dinosaur in our community, and the closest roller arena, I looked it up yesterday, is in Omaha. So Lincoln has none now, so I just thought that was a cool thing to note, that we actually have a roller arena yet, and people are looking for that, evidently.
So, Dakota, with that being said, you said that's Byway
136. Yep, Highway 136.
You're redoing the website, so that means you're handy with website-type work?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, that'll be good, I would think, at the Chamber and maybe in the other offices there, too, if we could spread that skill, because that's, I would think, a fairly unique skill that not everyone has.
Yes, yes.
Wonderful. Nope. Nice to meet you.
You too.
Again, and, thank you for the report. Any questions for Angie or Dakota?
Got the answer about the roller arena, because I saw that on here. I thought, duh, okay.
Have you been skating lately?
No, are you kidding?
It's right here in town.
I know.
All right.
That was really fun. We actually did a career fair with eighth graders yesterday, and a lot of them couldn't even think of the homestead because it's right here in town in their backyard, so they don't think of it as a tourism site. So it was kind of fun to talk about that.
And stuff you're familiar with, you always think of last.
Take
it for granted.
Yep.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Move to place the tourism report on file.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, second by Swavely, to put the tourism report on file. Any discussion? Please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. Up next, approve or disapprove resolution for special use permit 2023-1, which is resolution number
23-04.
23-04 for the placement of a commercial greenhouse operation.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Juergens, second by Lytle. We, of course, had a public hearing on this 2 weeks ago. This is for Mr. Jobbins on 66th Road.
I haven't heard anything new on this, by the way.
I haven't
either.
Good
or bad, either way.
I just had a question on what he's going to sell. If it was tomato plants.
He's here if you'd like to ask any specific questions. I'm sure it's vegetables and such, flowers. Do we have to state one of these on Don approved for the reason stated on record?
That's
right.
You already approved it. I mean, you got a motion to approve it.
Okay. And it would just be for the, just an approval?
Yeah.
Okay.
First box, the motion to approve.
Okay. Anything else on this one? This, like I say, I haven't heard anything either.
Again, I would, as far as what you're asking, there, just say that, make a statement that it satisfied the conditions set forth in your zoning regs.
You want me to, Roger?
That'd be part of your motion.
Okay, so, Mr. Juergens, would it be all right to add to your motion? We would approve this because it met all zoning regulations and there was no opposition from the public?
I guess if you have to.
Is that all right with you also, Mr. Lytle?
Yep.
Any other discussion? If not, please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. Congratulations, Mr. Jobber. We look forward to your future endeavors there. Thank you for your investment. Leading up to our public hearing for solar regs, there is a sign-up sheet for a public hearing if anyone would like to speak on the table to my right. Prior to that, we will receive PNC's recommendation on the proposed solar conversion system regulations from Ms. Wiegand. Morning, Lisa.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm assuming everybody has a copy of that. I have given Don a clerical cleanup on one of the pages that we can look at it several times, and then there's always little things. So as most would know, county zoning can have a significant impact on any kind of development. The process of working through zoning and how land can be used, whether it's restrictive in some cases or prohibited, or whether it's enhancing some opportunities, that's why we do zoning. The timeline, looking back at the timeline for zoning, just in 2018 and 19, we started the process. We had commission members that are no longer serve on the commission. We had three other commission members started the research for it, attended meetings, seminars, listened to subject matter experts. Let's face it, industry has changed significantly since the beginning, since they started developing those regulations. We went from a 4-page document initially, a simpler version, and then today we're submitting, these suggestions to you as being recommended. So then through 18 and 19, that research started. We went into 19 and 20, we hit the pandemic. So we were limited into meetings that were being able to be offered and just that work session time. But yet, commission still continued on to persevere through researching. Then in 2021, we focused our efforts when we wanted to prioritize solar. We needed to focus our efforts on wind again. And so wind took time. The process went well, but it always takes just a little bit longer than what one expected. After you guys passed the regulations for wind, we moved immediately back to solar. So solar has had about a year and a half back into research with subject matter experts with two hearings. The first hearing was held, I believe, in December on our first draft, and from public comment, We heard that we needed to go back and address adding an additional classification to that. There were several points through comment that we needed to address, and we did that. So the documents that you have here in front of you, many of that subject matter has been addressed two or three times by our commission members. So ultimately, the impact that solar has on our community will vary, you know, according to those classifications. We know that Norris Public Power has a couple projects that will fit in the Class 2 side of things. They have land secured for that. And I believe they'll have a representative here during the hearing process to share that with you. There is that classification when you, Eddie's got it turned over, you see that spreadsheet. We just added that for an easier follow along. Screenings were added. In some cases for classification of two, screenings could be a hinder in their development just because if you have two parties that are consenting. One of the things that we didn't address was could screenings possibly be waived if you have two mutual, you know, agreements. We have setbacks that are actually can be waived, but if a landowner would rather look at the solar regs instead of, or excuse me, the solar panels instead of a berm or a few trees, could that be something that would be, you know, negotiated between landowners? So I think they're going to touch a little bit on that a little bit later. But yeah, your commission today respectfully submits this to you with a lot of long, hard thought, and that was a 7-0 vote. I did ask commission members if anyone would like to attend today. Most of them are either at work or out in the field here today. So, but we are here to answer questions. I did reach out to Supervisor Haxby yesterday morning and asked her if she had anything, you know, that she needed. I told her I'd bring my notes up. So if I can help answer questions. So,
any questions for Lisa right away?
Yes, Don.
Did you say it was a 7-0 vote to forward this to the board?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
It was in the minutes. It was 3-3 with one person being absent.
To forward the regulations, sorry, I need to back up. Let me go back and look at that. So okay. We forwarded to you guys to review.
Well, that was 7-0.
That was a 7-0. There was a 3-3 vote when it got to the classification for the Class 4 setbacks because they went back and reviewed those Class 4, I believe.
That ended up a 5-2 when it was approved, though, correct?
You're talking about the 5-2 on for next meetings, for your next meeting. That was on
the swine
operation.
So,
Dawn, going back to Class 4, there was conversation that was reviewed again on Class 4 setbacks because we have Class 4 setbacks, from churches, schools, NRDs, and homesteads at 3/4 mile, and we had conversation then. It was on whether we should increase that all the way across the board to dwellings, platted subdivisions, and platted villages that aren't zoned, such as the Holmesville, Rockfords, and so forth. And that was that 3-3 vote. So that's what that vote was. And then after that didn't go through by majority, then board chose to move it on up to you guys.
It would have still been a 6-0 vote, wouldn't it?
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to think of who wasn't there that night. So,
Eight.
Thank you. Then it is a 6-0 vote. So, 6.
But it was
with
6-0 to forward to the board as it was. But there was indecision.
There was not consensus when the Class 4 came out for the setbacks to be increased to 3/4 mile all the way through on Class 4, that did not go through. So it was then from that point, the board chose to move it on up to you guys. So
we've got a little
Thank
bit.
You.
We've got a little. Any other questions for Lisa? I guess right away. We've got a little bit of time before our public hearing.
Yep.
10 minutes still. Do you have any general information you want to go over this? Any other conversations that P&Z had as they were discussing that would be pertinent for us to hear?
Um, I guess general rule of thumb, what we heard on the development side was when we were planning the process, megawatts, typically 1 megawatt will take about a footprint as it's designed today with about 7 acres. So then if you add the berming to it, you know, or at least that softening of the screenings, that may take 2 to 3 more acres. So that was one part of math that came in. Trying to think of anything offhand.
Typical height of these on the, and let's go on
the high side. Depended upon
the
rotator, whether they were rotating or not, or just a standard stationary, anywhere from 7 to 14 foot. There were questions of through public comment that was brought up about security lighting, you know, the amount of security lighting. The board did not place that into the regulations as far as a limit of lighting needed. That would be mostly for nighttime monitoring. Some of the larger operations obviously have a SCADA system and like a security system, so probably would be, you know, need somewhat of a lighting for nighttime security. But really still work through the participating versus non-participating, allowing negotiations to still be gone through with a two landowners or the developers still working with that process. You know, the smaller the footprint, obviously, on the class 2 and 3 are going to be a lot smaller than, obviously, class 4. There was conversation, are we too restrictive or not restrictive enough? That will always be conversation, you know, as we look at commercial operations. And so, again, creating that balance was most important. Don, I know you had addressed Viewshed, you know, working with Viewshed setbacks, you know, Viewshed studies, things like that. Again, Viewshed, many times through the application process, those larger operations are probably going to do a few Viewshed study that will be contributed to that. On the class 2 and 3, we know that on the Norse Public Power projects, those two projects have been in contact with those landowners and, in fact, have met with a larger facility that, you know, so there's that working relationship between the two of them. So escrow accounts were added. You know, so the platform that we followed, there was a base that we followed. Commission was able to do so through the escrow account. The ownership of the escrow was brought up, or ownership of a project timeline. You know, so when ownership changes bases, how would that be reported? Obviously, when you have an escrow account in, you know, in effect, you know, they're going to make sure that that escrow account has the proper transfer to it. So that was a safe net. We don't, when ownership on a general basis on any kind of project, for any permit, you know, 2 years down the road, we don't require an ownership through zoning. That's done through the, you know, deeds office, or I guess, you know, through the title search or through the deeds office themselves for reporting. Trying to think if there's anything else. Not really, I guess.
Lisa?
Yes.
You mentioned that know, to produce a megawatt would take approximately 10 acres.
That was kind of the general rule of thumb, what we heard.
That's fine. That gives me an idea. What would be the largest scale project you could see?
For Gage County?
Megawatts, yeah. I mean,
I can't answer that. I mean, right. Honestly, you could be looking. We know that there's projects out there that are, you know, being proposed in Nebraska that could reach up to, you know, 2,000 to 2,500 megawatts. So I know, you know, of a potential project in the McCool Junction area that may move forward. So that's a 2,500 to 3,000 megawatt project. So, and it would be a participating conjoining ownership.
maybe you don't know this question, I'm just curious, how close are the solar panels together?
They're butt to butt.
They're butt to butt,
yeah,
okay.
They're stationed together. We did hear testimony, I believe, on reflective matter through hearing process. The panel design, when we talked about industry standards continually changing, you know, technology is continually changing. From our developers, we heard that it's not advantageous to have anything show glare. However, maybe perhaps the metal, I know through testimony we heard, what about the metal that frames it? The commission did not address that metal frame. So, because the standard of the panels today may be different, you know, 2 years down the road. So it could be something, a condition that could be placed. Or, you know, discuss through the hearing process.
And I'm sure we'll talk about, Mr. Lytle, you have something? Oh, I'm sure we'll talk about this more. The berming, it can be vegetation or an earthen berm.
Mm-hmm.
What type of height is set on that?
I'd have to go back. So, rate of 4 trees. I mean, it's in each classification. Let's see, height at least 5 feet above the adjacent ground on class 4, so 5 feet above adjacent ground. But let's be realistic. When you put that footprint out there, you know, and you're only going 5 feet above and you're driving, you know, down the road and it's on, you know, 25, 30 acres on a hill or wherever it might be, you're going to see that. So berming or, you know, the softening, the screenings, isn't going to change that viewprint other than when you're at ground level next to it.
How was your, how were each of your meetings, I guess, did you have the, so when we obviously had a lot of opposition, how was the general feel of the public as P&Z had people?
The public offered good suggestions. I mean, they did their research also, and the commission was able to take that, you know, take those suggestions and go back and review their, you know, the regs. I mean, there wasn't anything. I didn't feel offensive at all. They were all good suggestions. Obviously, the National Park Service is a huge part of Gage County, and we took their suggestions and Friends of the Homestead suggestions into effect, too. You know, viewshed studies, they may speak about, you know, this morning during the hearing process, too. But again, working relationships between the developer and, you know, the landowners is still the ideal situation to get the county off of that. You know, we say the county, you have to do this too. So it's a good working relationship. And then keep in mind, you got setbacks, you know, according to those homesteads of 3/4 of a mile. So, but.
Right. Mr. Shuler.
But, Lisa, I just want to make clear that, yes, I suggested at a planning and zoning meeting that a viewshed study be considered for residents as well as because mm-hmm. it was suggested for homestead. And I've learned since that it would be impractical to do that for an entire area. Now, for one location such as homestead,
yep.
That's a different case.
Okay.
So I rescind that recommendation.
Thank you,
though, Don, as far
for
as
sure,
viewshed
yeah.
study. There's more to a viewshed study than I would have anticipated, and it's more cost, and so that's impractical.
Yeah. Thanks, Don, for letting us know on that right away. So. All right. We'll hopefully be able to answer your questions as time goes on. So thanks.
I'm sure we'll have more. Thank you, Lisa. Yep. We have a timed event at 9:30, a public hearing to hear support or opposition for the proposed solar conversion systems made in Gage County Planning and Zoning Regulations. There's a sign-up sheet going around. Anyone that would like to sign up, you can check on there that you'd like to speak or not speak, in favor or opposed. At this time, I would ask for a motion to go into public hearing for the aforesaid reason.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, second by Dorn, to go into public hearing at 9:30 on the clock. Any discussion on this? If not, please vote. 7 in favor. We are in public hearing. Is there any comment from the board before we start having people come up and give us their opinion? As we have people start coming up, we'll have you give your name and address for the record, and then we'll swear you in.
Larry Alder is up first.
Okay. Mr. Alder, good morning.
Good morning.
We'll give you up to 5 minutes to talk. I don't think anyone
will take that long.
5 minutes, but if you could give your name and address for the record.
Larry Alder, 2498 West Ash Road, Cortland, Nebraska.
Would you please raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
All right, go ahead, sir.
Okay, once again, good morning. I'd like to thank Planning and Zoning for all the hard work they did on these regulations. I've been involved in it, and they've really went through things. The Class 4 solar regulations, that addition, I think that was a very good idea. As far as the setbacks, I've always said that these setbacks for these industrial projects need to be measured from the non-participating property line, dwelling or no dwelling. The setbacks the Planning and Zoning Commission have set for non-participating properties without a dwelling, I feel, are not enough to protect those properties. If a non-participating property landowner has no intentions of developing a piece of property that will be bordering a solar project, then they and the solar developer ought to be able to work out an agreement on the setback for that property. That's all I have. Thank you for your time, and thank you for all you do for Gage County.
Thank you, Mr. Alder. Ashley Mason. Would you give your name and address for the record?
Ashley Mason, 1300 Lincoln Street.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please begin.
So I sent this email out to you guys yesterday, but I know email is not everyone's favorite way of communication, so I'm just going to read through it, and then I added in a few extra notes. I've attended all of the PNC meetings regarding this topic. I took lots of notes at these meetings and hope to see many people speak again today about their concerns. The PNC board did a thorough job of going through, but there are still a few concerns that have not been addressed by the board. I hope to see your board address these issues in the future. A quick summary of those. The first one is setbacks. Several people spoke and would like to see the setbacks increase to a mile. Safety is the biggest reason for these requests. Second, fire. This topic was brought up by a couple of times, and what was asked that the solar company provide all the needed manuals to all the rural fire departments and provide all of the needed supplies to extinguish any fires. Again, safety is the biggest reason for this request. Cost was another issue. Extinguishing a fire caused by the materials in a solar panel require different supplies than what many fire departments have on hand. Rural fire departments shouldn't have to cover these costs of an industry that we know is going to be profiting. The third one was mimicking wind. Many of the safety requirements and setback regulations in wind are not found in these solar regulations. Those who spoke on the issue would like to see regulations for large companies to be the same across the board in Gage County. It will also make it easier for those landowners who want to partner with the companies if the regulations are as similar as possible from one industry to the next. The fourth one was transmission lines. This issue, again, is similar to wind. Burying transmission lines is the safest way to ensure that stray voltage doesn't start a fire. I personally spoke on this issue and looked to see it addressed by the supervisors. During the meetings, there were a number of people who spoke in favor of the regulations, many wanting a firm regulation that protected the public from corporate industry. The majority of those people also wanted a one-mile setback, again, from property line, not from dwellings. My notes that I took allowed me to see that only a few, maybe three, spoke in opposition of the regulations. One that I recall most was outspoken was Don Schuler. He did speak on behalf of himself and not the board. He would like to see the regulations cut back to as minimal as possible. Just like many others here, I do see the need for continued growth in industry in Gage County. This particular industry, solar commercial, hasn't shown that it will bring long-term workers, increased revenue, or benefit tourism in any way. The county has been working hard over the last few years to address low population, low availability for work, housing, and tourism. How will less restrictions on the solar industry benefit the county as a whole? The will of the people, public safety, and protecting land should direct your continued efforts in creating solar commercial regulations. That one is a hard one to get out. Are there any questions? No? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mason. Deb Kai? I'm sorry, ma'am, if I
said... You got it right.
Okay.
Unusual, but it was right.
Will you give your name and address for the record, please?
My name is Deb Kai, 7694 West Cedar Road, DeWitt.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do.
Please begin.
I'm here to address the... from an emergency management aspect, because that's who I work for the state of Nebraska. And I wanted to see in these regulations a provision that the companies that are installing these solar panels would have training funds available for all the fire departments, because you have hazardous materials, you've got unknown effects of what these fires would cause. And if everybody knows now, we're in an extreme drought situation. And that takes out, it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of money to put out any type of fire. And now you're adding the component of the hazardous materials that are in these panels. So if you had training funds available from the installer or from the companies, then at least your fire departments can be trained on how to handle these situations.
Do you have any experience working with these? Solar panels
in general? Not with
solar
panels, because they're so new and we don't have that many installations in Nebraska. And I know a lot of our LEOPs don't even cover solar farms.
So it's a completely different fire scenario is what you're telling us? And
It's they're higher burning, they spread quicker, then you add in the component of the hazardous materials. And most of our fire departments aren't trained on the types of materials that are involved in these. Because most of us don't even know what is involved, what's in the panels themselves. Excuse me.
Ms. Axby.
I have a question. So when fighting these kind of fires are different than a regular fire,
yes,
is what you're saying.
It takes different equipment, possibly different equipment, different, like you might have to have foam, or some other type of ingredient to help put out these high-temperature fires.
So in here I read that, I believe I read that we have to notify just that one fire district that it lies within, but typically you have multiple districts responding to a larger fire.
Nebraska's mutual aid. I know when we had our fire, we had Claytonia, we had Cortland, we had DeWitt, we had Pickerel, we had Beatrice. So everybody helps everybody else. And then it can rise to the state level where the county can't handle it.
So this would be something where we'd want to have all fire departments receiving the supplies
I think it's more the training issue on how to handle what's in these panels and what could happen. Because that's what your emergency operation plans are for, is it's not... It's going to happen. It's what if it does happen? Because, praise God, hopefully we don't ever have an incident. So you have to prepare for the future.
Thank you.
Problems.
Any other questions from Ms. Kai? Thank you.
Now I get to go back to work.
Elizabeth Schakowsky Ferneding.
Thank you.
Would you give your name and address for the record, please, Elizabeth?
Yes, I'm Elizabeth Schakowsky Ferneding, 34998 South 66th Road, Blue Springs.
Will you raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
So help me God.
Please begin.
I need to borrow one of mine.
As most of you know, I'm a registered environmental health sanitarian, and so I can answer a few of the questions that we had earlier about what's actually in these. The chemicals of main concern, you've got cadmium, telluride, and silicon. Those are the things we're worried about right now. Now, in future, things may change, but right now, that's the issue. The dirty bird on that is the calcium telluride. That's a really tough bug. And if you're talking about fires, you're talking about respiration equipment is going to be, I mean, they're going to have to be completely protected because this stuff aerosolizes. And you breathe it in. The solar panels currently have those chemicals. There is a concern to public health if these chemicals get into our waterways or you breathe them in. The cadmium is also very toxic to aquatic life with large lasting effects. Cadmium will accumulate in the human body over time. Thoroughly wash your hands after touching solar panels. This is nothing to joke about. I mean, this is something you have to really be careful with. Solar panels are better than wind turbines for the environment, but they're definitely far from totally safe. Now, as far as on the decommissioning side, I think you've done a really good job. The wind decommissioning that you have done and the solar, I think I've read through all your documents, and I feel pretty comfortable with it. The thing to remember is we are dealing with toxic, hazardous waste because you've got the cadmium. And you've also got some silicon out there that you have to worry about. And so you do not want those things hitting landfills ever. And we've touched on that, the regs. We've done a good job. We just need to really keep an eye on that and make sure that the company is going to properly take care of the waste. The majority of all issues happen in construction. They break these panels when they're putting them up. 2% of the panels across the nation are destroyed with tornadoes and fires. So if you look at it, you know, the majority of problems are when they're installing them. So that's when you have to really keep an eye on the company that is putting them in. The ultimate goal on setbacks is to protect your non-participating landowners or neighbors from being affected or subjected to looking or hearing them daily. Public health is an issue with solar farms. Nothing like wind. But it is still an issue. And then the last comment to consider, please protect the viewshed of the Homestead National Historical Park. There is that 1916 federal law, the Organic Act, that makes it our job as Americans to protect our national parks. And you guys have done a great job, in my mind. Planning and Zoning did a great job, and you guys did a great job on your wind, so I'm assuming you'll also do a great job with solar.
Any
questions?
I have a question. This, I'm going to butcher it, cadmium?
Cadmium telluride?
Are all, I got to look, but do all solar panels, are they all made with this?
That's the crystalline formation. That's the integral part of a solar panel.
So all of them are made
currently,
with that.
Okay. But technology changes so fast. That's why, you know, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen in a year from now. We don't know what's going to happen 6 months from now. But today, this is an issue.
In this letter, it says you have to wash your hands and be really careful because of.
Correct.
Buildup of cadmium in people. Does that mean that as water hits these, that will wash off onto the ground?
This is the issue, and you have to remember, this is a relatively new industry. And science is following it, but we don't have a lot of good answers on that yet because they are actually studying the rainwater. And if they're properly installed, properly manufactured and properly installed, we should not have a problem. But the trick is, how do you guarantee that? And so the schools right now are looking into this. It's like, okay, you know, everybody's got faith that everybody on the chain has done things correctly. But if you have them on your own personal house, and a lot of people do, that's great. But people need to understand this isn't something to take lightly. You have to keep them clean. You got to wash them. But in doing that, you need to make sure you're wearing some PPE, personal protective equipment, when you're doing this. And I wouldn't even be afraid to wear a mask because, you know, your cadmium telluride, the biggest is the inhalation issue with that stuff. And that's when the fires, it can be a real issue because those firemen aren't going to have a clue what they're dealing with.
Mr. Schlevin.
One of the things that cadmium is in every piece of steel that's around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have this cadmium in this. Is no different than me picking this up or Terry grabbing a piece of his angle iron down at the shop. There's cadmium in it and all kinds of different types of chemicals that make up, that help to make up those things. So I said, you know, I understand where you're coming from. It's not, you know, there's a lot of problems could be had with it, okay? But, I mean, use that particular thing there is no different than some of the stuff we got on our desk here, okay?
So. And you've done it. He's right. If it's properly manufactured and installed properly, we should not have a problem. But you got to properly manufacture it, and you have to properly install it. And then if we get a huge hail, we live in Hail Alley, so a huge, let's say we get, you know, softball-size hail, they're going to take some of them out. That's when it becomes an issue. If they're intact, we're not going to have a problem if they're properly manufactured and installed correctly. It's the incidentals. It's like what happens if it gets into a fire, what happens if we got hail or it hits by a tornado. Those, and nobody can plan on those. But ultimately, like with the fire departments have to plan on stuff like that because they're the ones that have to react to it.
Any other questions for Ms. Schakowsky-Fernanding? Thank you.
Thank you.
Don Fernanding. Could you give your name and address for the record, please?
Don Fernanding, 34998 South 66 Road, Blue Springs.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please begin.
I just have one issue with the current proposed regulations with minor changes, that being the lack of protection for the viewshed of Homestead National Historical Park. The Organic Act, enacted in 1916, secured a new direction by creating the National Park Service with a resource protection goal stated in it. It tells us that this fundamental purpose is to conserve the scenery and the national and historical objects and the wildlife therein, and to promote for their enjoyment in such a manner and leave them unimpaired for the enjoyment of future generations. The Organic Act was written in the style of the day. It enables a simple and straightforward concept that continues to serve the long-term public interest. As such, the viewshed of the park is very much a part of the scenery that we are trying to protect for all generations. The Friends of Homestead National Historical Park is asking for the board to add into the SOLA regulations specific language protecting the viewshed of the park. We feel this could be accomplished by requiring a four-season viewshed study and allowing Homestead National Historical Park to comment on the study before a solar field of Class 2 and above applications could be approved. This would allow Homestead National Historical Park their viewshed as well as promote renewable forms of energy. At this time, Homestead National Historical Park has no current plans to build any solar facilities on park property, nor does the Friends of Homestead National Historical Park have any intentions to build a solar farm on their adjoining property. We do believe in the need for renewable energy. but we also must protect our national parks and leave them unimpaired for the enjoyment of all citizens and the education of children, not only for this generation, but for all generations to come. Thank you. Questions?
Any questions from the board? Ms. Saxby?
I just did a quick search here, and there's three places where the homestead was listed in class 2, 3, and 4 with setbacks, but those setbacks doesn't matter as much as long as it's not visible. So a viewshed study would.
That's what we're, you know, the setback of 3/4 of a mile, you can still see it.
But in some cases, that could be closer as long as it's without outside of the viewshed.
Correct. That is very correct.
So that's what you're asking to have it changed to, is to do a four-season
study.
Viewshed study with no setback distance, just determined
by
the viewshed. Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Jerry Entz?
Handouts I can show you that have some aerial photographs.
Yeah, we'll pass them around.
Yep.
Could you give your name and address for the record, please?
Yeah, I'm Jerry Enns. I'm the manager of engineering for the Norris Public Power District. Norris Public Power District, we serve 6 counties in southeast Nebraska, Gage County, of course, being one. We always, I guess, look for a way to save our customers some money.
Sir. Will you raise your right hand?
Yeah.
Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Okay, continue.
All right. Jerry Enns again, address 10011 East Locust Road, Holmesville, Nebraska. But Norris had heard about a project in southeast Kansas that was done by a solar company called Today's Power, Inc., TPI, as they're known. They work with some electric co-ops in that area to install these solar arrays. What Norris was interested in was that we could purchase the power from TPI at a fixed rate over the life of the solar project, which runs from 25 years with 2 5-year extensions possible, and that's based upon what Norris's view is on those extensions. So we were able to, lock in a PPA, power purchase agreement, for that 35 years at a fixed rate. So we would not have any escalator, built into the rate. So Norris then would buy this energy from TPI. They would sell it to us by the kilowatt hour. Norris would buy that. Then it would go out on Norris's distribution lines to feed people in the area. One of the criteria is that this energy does not flow onto the transmission system and out of state in Nebraska. Norris wanted to keep these units, below 1 megawatt because we have some financial advantage if we keep them below the 1 megawatt level. So each of these would be 999 kW. And like I say, it benefits, all of the Norris customers as a whole. Norris has approximately 175 distributed generation systems out there that are owned by customers that we connect to our distribution grid. Most of those are solar by far. They go on housetops. People put them in their backyards. We all know, I heard a lot about the concerns about some of the materials that make up a solar panel today. We all know on the products that we buy, we always see, comments about this is known to cause cancer in California. California is a major market for this, so I think if they were a real health-related issue, I don't think we'd see them installed in California like we do. As far as fires, Norris has 100 substations. We don't ask any fire department to put out a fire in our substations. We don't ask anybody to put out a fire in a solar array. So, to me, that's basically inconsequential, I guess. I mean, you would want to control the fire outside of the area, but, we don't need water sprayed on the electrical equipment in our substations or an array. The array that would be fenced in, They plant a warm season grass. And how we work with TPI, this Today Power Inc., Norris wanted to, you know, be in contact with the landowner. So Norris wants to lease the properties, and then we would have access agreement with TPI that would allow them to, you know, access the property. They would build their solar array, their single axis tracking unit, so they turn with the sun. You know, a panel, it's very important for them to absorb solar energy. They don't try to reflect it. So, you know, they're anti-glare glass, they're anti-glare units, because that's been, you know, a concern for some people. In relation to the Homestead National Monument, this array that we have, this array area up in northwest, here of Beatrice, northwest of Beatrice, it's over a mile away from the homestead. It's over a hill. So, you know, I don't know why a view shed would really be needed there, or a four-season study. I guess I don't think you would see that. There are ways to determine that. I've used Google Earth and their profile feature, and it looks like there would be no visible site to that array location. The other site we have is in the Diller area, and Jeff Hayes is here today. It would be on his property. I think he's planning to speak after I do. I didn't plan to speak today, but I think Lisa thought maybe. Saw me sitting there and thought maybe I could answer some questions. So if I can answer questions, I'm not a solar expert. I don't have anybody from TPI today. They were at some of the planning and zoning things. But Terry?
Jerry, these two proposals that I have in front of me here, what classification they be in?
They would be class two. That would be under the 1 megawatt. So
class two.
Yeah, we'd be at the 999 kW because that's benefits our Norris customers price-wise. And it doesn't flow out of state or on the transmission system. Those were two of the things that, you know, we had to have. So,
does this power stay within district, or does it go through Southwest Power Pool?
No, it would stay on Norris's distribution lines. We wouldn't, you know, we're not building transmission lines to it. We're basically connecting it to the distribution line that's there that runs down the county road that feeds your house.
Is that typical to have a better price on a smaller? I mean, most things you have economy of scale. Would that be typical to stay below 1 megawatt, and that's more efficient than having a large?
No, it's like our wholesale power supplier is Nebraska Public Power District, and you know we as Norris Public Power, through our contract with them, we can have up to 10% of this wind or solar. You know, Norris wouldn't touch a wind turbine at this point. We all, you know, seen that. We've looked at solar and wind years before, but our board was very, you know, stiff on, you know, if it doesn't benefit Norris customers, we're not interested. So, this was one, as we talked about, the PPA price is about where we're at with our wholesale provider now and locked in, so there's no escalator. You know, we see what's happened, you know, with everything else we buy, but this price stays locked in over that 30, possibly 35 years if Norris extends it to 35.
Jerry, first question, as far as the fire,
right.
You made the comment that you don't expect fire departments, rural fire, to come and take care of.
They would not spray the array. They don't spray our substations. You know, you just don't mix water with electricity.
Right.
So,
but if there was a fire at a substation, the rural fire would still respond to that.
Yeah, I think they would try to contain it. You know, they wouldn't, you know, spray into the substation area, but maybe keep the grass or keep it from spreading.
Okay.
You know, people put these on their houses. You know, I guess I've not heard of any fire, you know, situations happening on the roof mounts or in the backyards on the 175, you know, various DG systems that are connected. You know, these are the same panels that you go buy at Harbor Freight. You know, we have people that bought them at Harbor Freight and put them on their garage roof, put them in their yard. They buy a solar battery charger at Walmart. You know, it's, I feel it's pretty safe, you know.
The second question, I was just out of curiosity, if you did these two projects at the volume that you're talking, how much of Norris's usage is that? Those two projects, pretty small, isn't it?
Yeah, like I think so. Norris has tried to locate six of these throughout our six counties. Two happen to be in Gage County. They're building one right now at our Centerville, Nebraska site, which is along Highway 33, a couple miles west of Highway 77 on 33. They're putting one right next to our operations center, you know, there. But, yeah, I believe if we put all six of those in, all six, you know, 6 megawatts approximately, that's like 3% of 3%. What our peak is. So pretty small. But,
Jerry, do you feel that without adding alternative energy to the power grid that we're going to be able to keep up with the electrical demands that we see in the future?
Well, you know, I think, Don, the way to answer that, you know, I'm not a wind or solar person myself. You know, I'm an engineer. I guess to me, wind and solar don't replace baseload generation. You know, but as we see, there's a lot of political pressure on utilities to get rid of coal, to get rid of natural gas, and so to do that, you know, we have to generate kilowatt hours by some other means. You know, the issue gets to be, then, well, what happens? You know, we think of February 2021. You know, the wind didn't blow. The blades iced up. You know, we in Gage County, I at home saw my lights out for an hour. You know, and that's because, you know, we've lost a lot of baseload generation. So that is a concern to me. You know, I'm happy for, you know, wind or solar to generate some kilowatt hours, but you still need something that you can be there
replace what we have.
Yeah, I think that baseload generation is very important. We all found that out in February of 2021, you know.
But also, University of Nebraska data shows that there are not any new coal-burning or natural gas-burning facilities being built, and there's none even being applied for permitting that will expand.
Right. In the U.S.?
In the U.S.
China, they're going in every other day.
Yeah, trying to burn lots of coal.
But they're doing a lot of solar, too.
For us.
Yeah.
Terry.
One last question, I'll shut up. When it's dark, no generation, right?
Right, with a solar array, none.
What about when it's cloudy?
Well,
fairly cloudy?
Yeah, those hurt the solar generation. You know, as the cloud passes.
But you still, do you need direct sunlight to make those?
Well,
or not.
You know, on a day that's cloudy, there's going to be some that's going to be reduced. So, you know, the beauty for Norris is, you know, we don't, you know, this Arkansas TPI, they're an electric co-op, so they're a nonprofit. Norris is a nonprofit, you know. So, you know, Norris just buys the kilowatt hours. If it's a cloudy that day, it doesn't produce kilowatt hours, well, guess what? Norris doesn't pay for them. You, as Norris customers, don't pay for them.
All I need.
That's surprising, though. It's very close to the same price as what you're buying at wholesale.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's probably the time to start.
Well, there's some tax incentives that, you know, TPI collects, you know, that
Jerry,
Norris
you,
can't collect. So.
Do you have a card with you by chance?
Sure, I do.
I'll grab one from you today, or I can grab one from you another time, too, here soon.
I'll probably see you Thursday, too.
I have a feeling we will. Mr. Lytle.
Jerry, does the screenings affect the Class 2 project?
You know, the screenings to me, you know, it allows you to build a wooden fence. I think it's 8 foot tall. I need to review that. To me, if I was a neighbor, I would not like to see an 8 foot high wall next to me, I guess. You know, these would have a substation grade fence around it, you know, a chain link fence, barbed wire on the top, just like any substation that Norris has. You know, so yeah, the screenings, I think, do represent, you know, a difficulty. You know, it adds to the expense. I don't know if it really needs to be there. You know, I don't know, you know, a berm, looking out your window at a berm, I don't know how attractive that is for people. So, yeah, I would like to see, you know, like if we can meet the setback from the property line, do we really need to add, you know, a screening? I guess I'd like to see that maybe changed. If I had any say about it. But that's not why I came here today. I just came here to answer whatever I can.
Anything else from the board? Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks.
Jeffrey Hayes. You give your name and address for the record, sir.
Jeffrey R. Hayes, 10472 West Pine Road, Dillard, Nebraska.
You raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do.
Please begin.
All right. Well, Jerry called me the other day and said, you know, you guys were going to meet on this. I attended some of the planning and zoning committee meetings and stuff like that. Basically, I came here today to kind of ask about the screening around that and stuff. It was a little fuzzy. I thought I followed the P&Z a little bit closer and stuff like that. So just to give you an idea, I've talked to all my neighbors around the area, okay? None of them really have an issue with solar, all right? It's the, you know, wind generation and stuff like that. And just to give you an idea, I have a beautiful view of all 44 wind turbines down there in the Steel City Flat area. Do I like to look at them? No, but now they're just kind of part of the scenery. It's kind of interesting because you know which number is not working today and which one always causes the most problems and stuff like that. So if you ask me, I've kind of gotten used to it. You know, if you were to take them away today, I would probably miss them for a little while. So, you know, when we talk about that, having the solar panels around and stuff like that too, you can drive across the country and you can see, you know, the home generation ones. I've driven around, I've looked at some larger solar farms just to see, hey, what would it be like to have one on my property? If you ask me, is it going to be something to look at? Yeah. Is it something you kind of be getting used to? Yes. You know, where do we go? You know, we know that coal and gas and all that's not going to be here forever. We know that we need to supplement and stuff like that. Do we have all the technology that we really need to make it work right? You know, I don't know. We need to try, though. And that's kind of why I worked with Norris and stuff, you know, maybe to say I do my part. Am I going to get paid for it? Yes. But, you know, it is part of my property. Would I rather leave it in grass so I could go out and hunt my pheasant and quail? Yeah. But I also know that there's also a need for cleaner energy. You know, I'm trying to find that middle road. How do we, you know, find that middle road that we can have a consistent power source, like Jerry says, with coal, natural gas, stuff like that, and how can we supplement that? You know, so I'm willing to work with that and stuff. So, but the main thing I came here today was with the screening and stuff. I have, my house is not quite half a mile or a little over a quarter mile, I should say, from where the solar panels are going to be. Any other home is at least a half mile away. So my question was, am I going to have to put up, you know, a fence so Mr. Hopemeyer Cross, when he's planting his corn or beans, doesn't have to look at my solar panel? Am I going to have to plant trees, you know, and stuff like that? That would be my big concern. Really, there's no one that's going to see it except those that are driving by on the road and me looking out my west window. So those were the concerns, and maybe Lisa can answer some of those for me here in a little bit and stuff. But that was a big thing. You know, I don't want to have to push up a dirt berm, you know, and then in 25 years, I decide not to have the solar panels, so I'm going to have to push it all back, you know. So those were some of the concerns. And I know some of the other concerns of the other people, but just to give you a little idea of what I do, I'm a paramedic firefighter here in Beatrice, and I also volunteer for Diller Fire and Rescue. Now, if you ask me the concerns about putting a fire out on some of these, basically I know one of these days we're going to have an electric car fire. It is a desert beast, all right? Either you use copious amounts of water and try to put it out, keep it cool and stuff like that, and then unfortunately you deal with the runoff that goes down into the storm sewer or wherever it is. So, you know, if you ask today what's the best way to do it, well, unfortunately it's to pull it away from a structure, protect the structures, and basically let it burn until it goes out. You know, so we're just starting to learn about those things, what to do. As far as a solar panel burning up, you know, yeah, can it cause some pollution? Yeah, and stuff like that. So, you know, what do? Every day we're faced with these situations. Just in the time that you guys have started the public meeting here, I guarantee you if you've known what's gone by this highway that is considered a hazardous material, it might scare you. There's a lot of truck traffic through here. There's a lot of things that go through here, and they go through here safely. 99.9% of the time, we don't care. is that 0.1% time that the tank leaks or it catches on fire or something that we always hear about. You know, most things are regulated quite well. Most things go on a daily basis without a lot of trouble. So could there be a trouble with a tornado? Probably. You know, could grass fire, you know, burn them? Yes. Training with the local fire departments would be good, all right? But as Jerry kind of said, I'm not going in and putting out a substation fire. I'm not even getting close to it. Will I protect the property around and protect property that's adjacent to it so it doesn't spread to there? Yeah. I let the people that actually know how to do that and, you know, take care of that to do that. If there's hazardous waste after that, you clean it up. You know, unfortunately, we've had an area close by down in Kansas that has that issue. We all heard about Illinois. You know, those seem to be prevalent things. But still, like I say, 99.9% of the time, everything works well. I had opportunity to talk to the people from the solar company and stuff. I looked them up a little bit, read about them. They seem like a reputable company. I think they generally care about what they're doing and trying to do it right. So is that an issue? No. So, you know, that's why I've been working with them, and I'm, you know, I'm willing to take a chance to put them on my property. So I guess that's about most of it anyway. But like I said, I was more concerned about, you know, putting up a dirt berm or planting trees and stuff like that. So I guess that's kind of where I wanted to get some direction on that, you know, since the closest house would be a half mile away, and the setback off the property line meets, you know, stipulations and everything else too. So, questions?
That's Gary. Somehow you knew that I was going to ask about the about your profession. So good job hitting that before I got to it. Okay. And you make a very good point as far as the stuff that travels down our highways. You don't want to have that little orange book that tells you all the things and drive down the highway and look at those signs and then read the numbers as to what's traveling, because there are a lot of interesting elements that flow through our highways. The question that I have as far as equipment and whatever else, we have a hazmat team here in town, which is you guys, correct?
Yeah, we are a regional hazmat team for the state of Nebraska.
And would be prepared relatively for something like this. And you don't have to go out on a limb here. But
no, that's fine.
Just tell, I guess, just answer for us what preparedness you would have.
Okay. Well, as far as that, like I say, Beatrice is a regional hazmat team, and I am a hazmat technician. There's some younger guys that have taken and actually taken the state certification test, because when I took it, there wasn't a certification test, so that just means I'm getting old. But, you know, we have a lot of the equipment. We have, just to give you an idea, a weather station, you know, all the sorts of decontamination equipment. We have level A encapsulated suits that we use and everything else. Can you totally be prepared for every situation? No. A lot of people think hazmat is an emergency response that requires, you know, quick response, quick, you know, mitigation of the situation. Unfortunately, hazmat is nothing fast. All right. It can take days, it can take weeks, it can linger for months, as they're finding out in Kansas, and they'll find out in Illinois as they keep cleaning that mess up. So, you know, a lot of people expect, oh, the hazmat team's here, they're going to take care of it, and it's done. It doesn't happen that way. You know, here not too long ago, I believe down on someone's property south of town, there was a barrel that leaked, got into the creek and stuff like that. So that was a minor incident. It was fairly well mitigated, but yet that took days, weeks, you know, to get things cleaned up and stuff like that. Very small. And with the DEQ, you know, they'll look at different size leaks, incidents, and stuff like that is how they need to mitigate it. A lot of small spills aren't a big deal. Yeah, are they messy? Should they have happened? No, but you know, we can mitigate those fairly quickly, take care of them, and with minimal damage and interference to the environment. You know, unfortunately, what happens is when you get into the waterway, into, you know, Big Blue River and stuff like that, that's when it causes issues.
and stuff like that, aka down in Kansas or in Illinois, you know, and stuff like that. We do have minimal equipment, you know, as far as booms and stuff that we can use. You know, we can create overflow, underflow dams, whatever we need to do and stuff to start mitigating that. But we also work in conjunction with the Army National Guard, the CST 65 team up in them. And those guys, that's what they do. You know, unfortunately, if we need those, you need to ask the governor, and then they need to be activated, you know, so it might take hours, even a day or so, to get them to come there. So that's how it works. It works, it just doesn't always work fast, and Lisa works with the chief a little bit more on that and stuff. And
as for respirators, you guys would be protected on these types of elements, or
For hazmat, as far as our SCBAs and stuff like that, they got to meet certain certifications on that. Of course, that just means they're more pricey than a normal SCBA. You know, anytime you put a designation on something as a hazmat or, you know, EMS or fire, you know, you could go to Walmart and buy the same thing for half the price. But yeah, they do meet that. Our suits are tested yearly and stuff like that. There's certain things that you got to do. I don't deal a lot with that, except when the chief tells me, you know, hey, go do that. So we have minimal equipment to at least start the process to safeguard it, and then we ask for additional resources.
As far as rural fire, would they have the equipment, the respirators on hand that they would need for something like that?
They have FCBAs, too. And just so you know, since I volunteer on Diller, you'll have to apologize. I'll have to apologize because I forget the name of the company that manages those wind turbines and stuff. We're looking at doing a little more training here with them again. But as far as they have an incident at their scene, whether it is a rescue, if one of them gets in trouble up in the turbine compartment or something like that, they are trained to, like, self-extricate and or take care of themselves. If something's on fire, you know, I'm not going to spray water high enough up there and stuff like that. If some of that oil leaks, hits the ground and stuff, you know, they're responsible. It's pretty minimal and stuff. But they're trained to do that. We're a supplement to them.
Right.
So we get there, we talk to them, we work with them and stuff like that. So as far as that, we've done some training with them. We're looking at sometime this summer, maybe early to fall, to do a little more training with them and stuff like that. So they're pretty good about that.
Thanks for answering those questions. But I know you weren't here to answer that, but two you are.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's actually.
Oh, it's just a follow-up from what he said. I mean, you're actively going to trainings, and so for them to supply a training to all fire departments that may or may not come in contact with that or supply the equipment that is, you said, is expensive would be beneficial.
Oh, yeah. You know, training's always good, having a better clue and stuff, because what we don't want to do is, you know, a fire department is to wander into a situation not prepared and then go, oops, you know, you just stepped in that puddle of, you know, polyvinyl chloride, and you know, you'll be dead in 2 years from cancer. You know, that's a bad thing. Do you need training? Yes. Do you need to understand it? Yeah. You know, unfortunately, me with hazmat, I kind of use the thumb technique. If I can still see it with my thumb, I figure I'm a little too close yet. That's always kind of been my position, but you know, it is what I do, so I try to do what I can as best I can. So, but the nice thing is there's all sorts of resources. Like I say, the big thing is you just don't get in a hurry and try not to make any mistakes. So, and part of that is training. And I'm pretty sure, you know, I can't answer for the solar company, but I'm sure they would be, you know, happy to probably have one of their engineers come down and explain stuff. And maybe getting off track, but still talking about it. A lot of times where we have the electrical fires and stuff, because I looked up and I get a lot of reports, you know, and stuff like that. Down in Arizona, I forget the way, but there was a wind station, and they use what they call an ESS, which is an electrical storage system, okay, that is actually batteries in there. That's where energy is stored. That way, if the wind don't blow, you know, the batteries, they still have a constant supply of energy. From what I understand, that's not going to be part of this. Basically, they're just going to go through a transformer, you know, step it up, whatever they got to do to put on the grid and stuff like that. So there's not going to be a storage system or a battery system on this. So that mitigates a lot of problems, because when you get those storage systems, that's where you would have the electrical fire built up of some
just put it bluntly, bad gases and stuff like that. So as far as I know and everything that I've, you know, have talked to them about and stuff like that, there is no storage system. There will be some kind of transformer system, but that's just taking the electricity to step it up to put it on the grid.
Mr. Schuler.
What is the screening requirement on a Class 2 solar, Lisa?
So you have the solar regulations here in front of you, by chance? So if you'll
turn
to...
Yeah, and I'm not clear on the spacing and so forth on the...
So Class 2 is on page... Class 2 starts on page 6, referencing that when you go then to page... the bottom of page 6 or 7, it starts the visual screening for non-participating public park uses and school uses. And then as it moves forward, adjacent non-participating gives them some options, 75 foot in both directions, 8 foot above the ground, gives them an option of the chain link fences. D shows the side slopes if you're using the berm technique. If you're using vegetation is E. And F.
So on vegetation, the proposed right now is at least 4 rows of trees?
4 trees, not rows.
Okay.
4 trees. Of the 4 trees, 1 should be a deciduous and 3 should be an evergreen or a ornamental tree.
And 100 foot apart?
Trees shall be evenly distributed within each 100 linear foot. So a group of 4 trees, 100 foot.
Oh, you're saying 4 trees per 100 foot.
Yes, so it's within that group to make the distance of the whatever footprint that they have on the side. You know, again, he brings up a good point as to if they use the berm technique, what would you rather look at, a pile of dirt? We're not stating they have to use one or the other. You're giving them an option. So I can certainly see the impact on a Class 2, what screenings has. But Norris Public Power was not at our hearing during our hearing process, so we didn't see the negativity impact, you know, looking at a smaller classification. So we appreciate them coming forward and bringing that to our attention.
So there's no reference here to how many rows. It's just one row,
right,
with 4 trees.
Mm-hmm. Every 100 foot.
Yep.
In within each 100 foot, and each consecutive 100 foot has another 4 trees.
Yep, stop 3. So you're stopping
row.
Some soften blow.
Okay.
But then, keep in mind, their goal is to catch the sun, so it's going to take a larger amount of acres, you know, to get that distance,
right,
not to have shading either. So when you have a larger classification, it may not be impacted as much. And then on Class 4, you know, that's a whole nother.
But the requirement is only to have a tree at maturity for a height. Seems like I read that somewhere. Was it 15 feet?
So the goal would be that it has a minimum of 15 feet. So, you know, obviously it takes a little bit to get there, but hopefully you're planting a deciduous of at least 15 foot. So,
but it does require a hardwood tree, a deciduous shade tree.
Yep. So you have some spread there. So,
But it also says on letter F, visual screening is not required along the property line adjacent to a participating property.
Mm-hmm.
So that's easily mitigated.
It could be, yes.
So would it need it along the road?
Continually maintain. It would not need to be along the, you know, the road access. Yeah. But
unless there's a non-participating dwelling on the other side.
The dwelling side.
So would the answer for Mr. Hayes be there would not be a requirement for a...
I'd have to have time to observe. Yeah.
But he'd be participating, so he wouldn't apply.
Right. Right. But there is a home half mile.
If someone would build then across the road, then that would change, or
I've
no?
I've not seen his plans, so I can't really state.
We won't speculate on this because that'll get us in trouble.
Yeah,
but
what if it all does?
Just wondering how the rules work. But any other questions for Mr. Hayes as we're going through public hearing now? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Betty Boyko.
Good
Name and address for the record, please.
Betty Boykin, Homestead National Historical Park, Highway 4.
Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please begin.
Okay, first of all, I want to say good morning and to thank both the Planning and Zoning Board as well as you for the support that you have provided Homestead in the past, and I'm confident again in the future. A lot of the things that I was going to say were already very eloquently stated by other speakers today. My main concern, of course, is a lot like what you have to do. It's a balancing act. As was previously stated, I have the Organic Act, which is to protect for future generations, you know, the viewshed and the site. And also, the National Park Service does value renewable energy. And so one important thing that I think is also I'd like to share that I think is something that you'd like to consider, and that is that tourism is also important as far as the visitation to Homestead. Visitors from across the nation and the world come to Homestead, and according to a 2021 Visitor Spending Effects Report, park visitors spent an estimated $2 million in local gateway regions while visiting Homestead. These expenditures supported a total of 27 jobs, $735,000 in labor income, and $2.3 million in economic output. And I think that certainly is something that we consider as we're trying to figure out how do we balance these conflicting perspectives. As you consider the placement for commercial solar projects, I believe that these energy projects and proposals can be located and designed in a way that protects national treasures and landscapes like Homestead. However, we can't do this alone. And as previously been said, these commercial solar projects do vary in size and height. They can rotate or be stationary, and sometimes, like someone else said, require their own transmission lines. For these reasons, I would like to ask you to please consider requiring these commercial solar conversion system developers to prepare a visual resource study or prior to the permit being approved. This would allow landowners, not just Homestead or the park, to have a better sense of the potential impacts to their property. In closing, I would just like to say, on January 1, 1863, 12 o'clock a.m., Daniel Freeman was successful in convincing a land office to open so that he could file a claim under the Homestead Act. It wasn't the first in the county. It wasn't the first in the state. It was the first in the nation. What a gift he gave to Gage County. Again, in 1936, citizens of Gage County convinced Congress to establish Homestead National Historical Park as a unit of the National Park Service because of this national significance. Another gift to Gage County. Your help in protecting this nationally significant gift is your decision and would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Boyko. Are there any questions from the board? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Are there any other names on a list that I do not have?
I don't think so.
Would anyone else from the public like to speak in opposition or in support of the regulations? Any comments from the board at this time in public hearing? This will be something we'll continue to discuss. Of course, we won't have any action today. I doubt we're ready in 2 weeks for any action on this either, unless the board decides at committee meetings in a couple of weeks that we want to put this on the agenda, but I'm guessing this will be something we keep milling over for a little while, just as P&Z did. But if there's no additional comment from the board at this time, I would ask for a motion to come out of public hearing at 10:29.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Lytle, second by Swavely. Please vote. 7 in favor. We are back in regular session. Up next is approve or disapprove the agreement between Gage County and Applied Connective for IT services. We have a contract on our desk here. I guess I'd ask for a motion before we go into discussion on it. Moved by Haxby.
Second.
Second by Swavely. Don, do you want to go over this contract? Or this is a contract that we had before.
This is what we had before, and it's been reviewed by the Secretary of State to comply with the dollars that they will give us for reimbursement, setting it up, and getting started. And there's some other additional grants that are available, as I understand.
I guess a question I have is, Roger, have you gone over this contract?
No.
Okay.
I just got it. I'd like to tell you I did it, but I'd be lying.
Well, I didn't know if you had received this ahead of time
Not. I got it like Monday night, so.
So this would be for, like we've talked about, network security, IT support, things like that. Ms. Haxby?
So I went through this. I think the big thing is we had two to look at. One had the capacity to be able to implement this. This is a one-year contract, so we can get things implemented if that, in the end, doesn't work. Another nice part that I heard about with NACO is Applied Connective actually helps with our grant applications to make sure that this is being paid for. And they'll know the application process because they're going to be doing it with a lot of other counties. So that was another kind of perk with this. But the main part about this is that they have the manpower to take care of it in a short amount of time, get us set up, and then a year from now we can reevaluate.
They can say they change the period. Okay. I'm not going to hold you guys up for it, but I'm just saying. Okay. But realistically.
Any additional comments from the board or questions on this contract specifically? One-year contract.
There are a lot of grants that help pay for this stuff, at least initially, so we need to make sure we're on top of those.
This will be a continuing line item for us, regardless of which company it is. This will be something that we can just plan on from here on out. Not necessarily with this company, but if things go well, it could be. But, I mean, this is going to be an additional expense that we just need to plan on moving forward, accounting for every year.
I would note, you know, again, anything with IT or some personal professional contract like that, once you're in with somebody, they're going to make changes here that they know about. And basically, if they do a good job, like you said, you're going to stay with them. And that's just the way this particular industry is. So.
We have a motion by Haxby, second by Swavely. Any additional discussion on this contract? If not, I would ask you to vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. We will start getting things set up then. We do not have an agreement between between Gage County and FOP. FOP has their stuff to us. We are waiting for our attorney to get back the revised contract. Once we have that, I mean, I would assume we'll, unless there's a want from the board to have a special meeting to put that on. Otherwise, we'll have that on in 2 weeks, I would assume.
Just received it just now.
You just now received it. Awesome. Perfect timing.
With the last one in mind still, I would say we'll wait until we review that thoroughly still.
Yeah. So the benefit is that, you know, we can take the time that we need to look at this, and it can wait till the next meeting. It isn't the end of the world.
And I would also, do we want to have Roger look this over, since this is coming from our other counsel? I mean, what's your opinion on this?
No, this came from another attorney. He won't understand it.
You left out something before other attorney.
Yes, yes, he probably should.
Yeah, I wonder if you have time to go through that for us, Roger. We'll put that on the pile that we give you.
Is this the FOP?
Yeah, this one's the FOP.
Well, first of all, I'll call the other attorney, not you know, our other attorney, and say, what's going on with this thing?
But it probably wouldn't hurt that one. And then we've thrown another one at Roger here to take a look at also for us. Put that on the stack of work we're not going to pay you to review for us.
Don and I have thoroughly looked at it. Dave's looked at it. I think Don, well, now that we have the final version, she'll get it out for people to review. But it has had eyes on it. But Roger's well acquainted with it. So
you know, like your bullet points off your what you guys have been focusing on, so that at least I can narrow it down to those areas. Thank you.
Anything else from the board prior to adjournment? If not, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn at 10:36.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Swavely, second by Dorn.
Rachel.
Please vote. Seven in favor.
Don't break your leg.
A cloud of dust out the back door. We are adjourned.